It is my great pleasure to welcome to the courtroom five judges from the Russian Federation who are visiting Chicago this week and who are being taken to quite a few of our legal institutions, including the district court yesterday, this court today, and other things later. They are Sergei Gorokhov from the Yaroslavl Regional Court, Vladimir Kashirin from the St. Petersburg City Court, Svetlana Kashirina from the Tver Regional Court, Irina Mirogorodskaya with the St. Petersburg City Court, and Yelena Pozniakova with the Tula Regional Court. They are here in the courtroom today. We welcome you all, and we hope you enjoy the arguments. So with that, we will call the first case for this morning, Gullett against the Town of Normal. Mr. Mancinella.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The case before you today is a failure to promote case. The plaintiff, Connie Gullett, is a female that was denied the position of a full-time maintenance specialist when she applied for an open position in January 2001. This was her third such application. Ms. Gullett worked as a full-time seasonal maintenance worker for defendant Town of Normal for 5 years immediately preceding the 2001 application. The seasonal position ran from mid to late May through mid to late December each year, or approximately 8 months.
Mr. Mancinella, it's not enough to show that she was qualified for this position. We have to show that, in fact, the Town of Normal was discriminating when it chose to give it to a different person. And it really seems to me that your evidence boils down to this kind of unlabeled interview note from Mr. Slagle, where he writes most qualified, but he doesn't write Connie Gullett is most qualified or anything else like that.
You are correct in two respects. Our burden today, and it has been for some time, is to prove pretext. That is, the town's reason for hiring, their stated reason was that Mr. Perry was the most qualified. And we believe there is sufficient and reasonable inferences that exist on the record to prove pretext. And I'm certainly prepared in a moment's time to address those directly.
And can you tell us then what your evidence is that he lied about her work record or her abilities?
I can, and that's part of the evidence of pretext that I will get to, too. Addressing that straight away, Mr. Slagle was the major decision maker. There really is ample evidence of that in the record. Mr. Slagle was the plaintiff's supervisor for at least 4 years, and prior to that, worked alongside her as a co-worker. Mr. Slagle stated to the other interview panel members, and there were two others, three total, that Ms. Gullett had was limited in her abilities and had a poor work record. Yet during his deposition testimony, when asked specifically, did Ms. Gullett have any deficiencies, he emphatically and succinctly stated no. In fact, in his deposition testimony, in describing his subordinate, former co-worker, he described her as a good worker who was always on time or seldom late and never sick and never late. Obviously, contradictory information from someone who has a poor work record and limited in her abilities. Mr. Slagle also said...
But am I correct in understanding that you think we should regard this as a decision solely made by Mr. Slagle and not the other two members of the interview panel?
No, I do not. This was a three-person interview panel member, but it's our theory of the case, and I think the evidence demonstrates it very clearly. Mr. Garibay, the human resource individual, was another individual on the panel member, and Mr. Way, another maintenance specialist, was the third member. Mr. Garibay directly said in his deposition testimony, which is in the record, that he relied on Alan Slagle, rightly so, to describe his knowledge of the work record of Ms. Gullett, the plaintiff here. Mr. Way knew Mr. Perry and had some familiarity with Ms. Gullett, but he said, in fact, the hiring supervisor should be allocated more say, was the term he used, into who gets to make the decision. And Mr. Slagle himself directly stated in the record that the individual hiring, and he was hiring to fill a slot within his area, should have more say as well. So certainly there were other people that were involved, but Mr. Slagle's statements that she was limited in her abilities and had a poor work record, when he contradicted those very same statements saying she had no deficiencies, did, in our view, infect the panel members' decision-making process. Please let us also remember that several months before the hiring decision in question, Mr. Slagle made a rather bold, profane statement that he will never hire the effing B-I-T-C-H. And, of course, he did not spell that word out. What that precluded is categorically, no matter what, he would not hire the plaintiff. Now, Judge Mim...
We do. Yeah, Judge Mim thought that was a stray remark, though, and by the time you had... That's why I asked you about the other two people on the panel, because it sounds to me like you're saying we really do have to disregard them, since their evaluation of the candidates before them, according to your view of the case, was fatally tainted by Mr. Slagle's input, which is as though they were never there. And they, of course, did rank other people. One of them did rank Mr. Perry the highest, and the other had Mr. Perry plus a different person kind of at a tie.
That is correct. A couple of things to clarify in my mind. Judge Mim did indicate that it may be a stray remark. He also, I think, the real holding, if you will, of his order was that he thought it wasn't direct evidence of discrimination. He thought it was maybe evidence of personal animus. Well, I think, in fact, to state that you will categorically never hire someone is different than in Hildebrandt versus Illinois Department of Natural Resources when someone says, oh, she'll never get those kinds of performance reviews. And in fact, she did get, the plaintiff in that case did receive above average performance reviews. And the court held in that case that that might have been predictive as to her performance. Here, Mr. Slagle categorically said, I will not hire her. Maybe not direct evidence, but evidence of pretext, especially if, as you pointed out, the most qualified writing upon examination and the reasonable inferences that flow from that writing suggests that, in fact, at the very least, I think under the well-recognized standards for summary judgment, in which all reasonable inferences must be construed in light of the non-moving party.
So I don't understand this aspect of your argument, that handwritten note saying most qualified. What is the link to your client? I don't know that there is any in the record.
I beg to disagree, Your Honor. On page 70 of the appendix, we have the most qualified writing. And as Your Honor may recall or may have in front of you, essentially there's two components of that. There's a numbered list at the top saying, one, most qualified, and two, resolve that question before the interview. I think quite clearly that the break between those two groups, one and two, and the heading that begins Perry and the list that follows shows that there's some break in the writer's thoughts or ideas. Using the principles of summary judgment in which reasonable inferences must be construed in our favor, I would suggest to you that at the very least, Mr. Perry cannot be viewed as the most qualified individual.
Let me talk about this whole limited issue, because one of the things that Slagle testified to was that Perry knew how to operate this knew the brush disposal route, knew how to operate the bucket truck, and had experience in hot asphalt, concrete, and excavation. That type of experience. Was there any evidence that your client did?
Absolutely. In fact, Judge Mim,
in terms of those specific areas.
Hot asphalt. In fact, Alan Slagle clearly in the record in his deposition testimony indicated that he personally trained the plaintiff in hot asphalt. Mr. Way, a member of the interview panel, said he didn't know two things, that Ms. Gullett had significant tree trimming experience when, in fact, Mr. Slagle assigned and worked directly with the plaintiff, Ms. Gullett, performing significant tree trimming experience. And also, Mr. Way did not know that Ms. Gullett had hot asphalt from start to finish. That is in the record. Judge Mim did make a finding. He did state, I think incorrectly, and the record supports this, that Ms. Gullett did not have concrete experience or hot asphalt.
You're about to run out of your time if you want to save just a bit for rebuttal.
I would, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Duarte.
May it please the Court. My name is Alan Duarte. I represent the appellee, the Town of Normal. Your Honors, the District Court's decision in this case should be affirmed because with respect to the disparate treatment claim, plaintiff has failed to show any evidence of pretext. And with respect to the disparate impact claim, she has failed to make a sufficient showing with respect to either of the elements. As Your Honor pointed out, plaintiff's primary argument with respect to disparate treatment revolves around this note. And the fundamental defect with that argument is that it's really a comparison of qualifications argument in disguise.
But even the notes to one side, it does seem that Mr. Menzel is making an argument that this really was de facto Mr. Slagle's decision, and Mr. Slagle was biased against the plaintiff.
Well, Judge, I have a couple points on that. One is that it was not just a de facto decision by Mr. Slagle as the sort of sole as a sole hiring sole decision maker. This was a three-person panel. Kenny Way testified that he knew the applicants. He knew Connie Gullett personally. He was an assistant street supervisor himself. He knew Eric Perry, had known him his whole life. And he testified he made his decision based upon his knowledge of the applicants, that he looked at their experience, that he knew what he knew about them personally. His big concern was, frankly, that the candidate be motivated, be an eager beaver.
But what about the parts of the testimony Mr. Manzella was referring to where they say, well, Mr. Slagle was her supervisor, they were going to rely on his evaluation of her work record?
I think they said that his input was certainly important, that he could speak to her abilities perhaps in ways that they could not. But Mr. Wade nonetheless testified that he made his decision based upon his own appraisal of the candidates. And as Your Honor pointed out, Jose Garibay also, his testimony was by the time he sought input from the other two members of the panel, he'd already picked Eric Perry as being in his top group. So I think there really is no evidence that that Alan Slagle had any kind of undue influence upon the other members of the panel. Beyond that, we need to look at what did Alan Slagle say, because there's nothing in the record that indicates that any influence he had was untoward. There's nothing. There was no lie, to be blunt. Everything he said is supported by the record, and there's been no evidence to the contrary. As Your Honor pointed out, he ran through a list of about 10 things, 10 ways in which he felt that Eric Perry was superior. There hasn't been any showing by the plaintiff that that's incorrect.
Well, but Mr. Manzella just cited a couple of things that were incorrect. Couldn't that cause a trier of fact to lose confidence in the other points he made?
No, Judge. First of all, that wasn't I don't think that was brought up, first of all, in the briefing. Secondly, the fact that Alan Slagle may have trained Connie Gullett doesn't mean that Eric Perry wasn't better at hot asphalt, for example. The fact that he may have gotten her on the bucket truck a couple times, which I think was his testimony, doesn't mean that Eric Perry didn't have substantially more experience on the bucket truck. The fact that she's limited in her abilities doesn't mean she's a poor worker. It just means she's not as good as somebody else.
Well, what about his statement in the deposition that she was a good worker?
He explained that that means that she's an average worker. To him, average and good are the same thing. And again, my point is the same, Your Honor. She may have very well been a good worker within the streets department. Eric Perry was a better candidate. He liked him better. He had more experience. He liked his lifelong experience in construction and the fact that he'd had all his experience with machinery and all these other skills.
Well, how do you square the deposition testimony that she was a good worker with one of the reasons given that she had a poor work record?
Judge, frankly, I could not find any reference to a poor work record in the record at all. I did see the limited abilities. I don't see anywhere where Alan Slagle or anyone testified that he said that she had a poor work record. That doesn't seem to be any basis for making a decision by any of the three decision makers at all. It seemed to come down to basically Kenny Way saying he wanted someone who was motivated, and Eric Perry fit that bill better than Connie Gullett's. Alan Slagle saying he wanted to have someone with a wide range of skills. Again, Eric Perry fit that bill. And Jose Garibay, who was looking for both things. He said he wanted someone who was motivated, who got along well with others, and who also had the wide range of skills that needed to do the different variety of things they do in streets. And he thought Perry and possibly one other person sort of fit those criteria, and that plaintiff didn't really stand out in his mind in any way.
But of course, what he said was that he stopped considering her for the job after Slagle said her abilities were limited.
I think he said that may have diminished his opinion of her.
Isn't it something different to say he stopped considering her for the job versus that diminished his view changed his view?
I don't recall that his testimony was that he stopped considering her at all, that he didn't consider her a candidate. I think his testimony was that his opinion of her may have been altered by Slagle saying that she was limited in her abilities. And again, the crucial point there is that Slagle was being honest, that she was limited in her abilities as compared to Eric Perry. She didn't have that depth or range of experience that the other candidate did have.
But what weight should we give, though, to the fact that's kind of lurking around the background here that not a single woman had ever been hired either in that waste department that they often hired people from? I don't want to get into whether always policy or anything, but certainly often. And as far as I can decipher this record, apart from her part-time employment in this streets division, there hadn't been a full-time woman in this position either. You can dress these things up how you want, but women didn't seem to get hired for this.
Well, there's a couple of responses to that. One is that women didn't seem to apply for it either. There's been no evidence in the record that they were turning away applicants, female applicants. I think the record shows that Connie Gullo is actually the only person who ever did apply, and I think it's relevant in that regard and in other respects to show that Alan Slagle, in fact, did hire her year after year after year to be a seasonal maintenance specialist. And that was a decision over which he had sole province. No one else had any input. That was his choice. So to say that now he's got some kind of gender bias, I think would contradict that evidence. Beyond that, with respect to the alleged practice, there's no evidence that operated in this instance. Say what you will about, speculate about what happened in the past. Jose Garibay and Alan Slagle both testified that there was no preferential policy employed in the 2001 hiring decision, and plaintiff has no evidence to rebut that. She basically, all she says is, well, you shouldn't believe the town's witnesses, and you should be permitted to speculate that perhaps the policy was in effect. But I think Millbrook says that that's not a permissible argument to make. That's not going to get you past your summary judgment hurdle. One of her other arguments was Alan Slagle's reaction to the fact that she questioned the policy during the interview. And this is sort of along the same lines. He testified his reaction was that he thought it was inappropriate, but that it didn't affect his decision-making process at all. Again, there's no other evidence to the contrary. All plaintiff can say on this point is, again, well, don't believe Alan Slagle. Let's speculate about whether he may have held that against her. That takes away the reaction and the practice. That takes away two of his four arguments for why there's pretext in this case. The primary argument was, of course, the notes. I think we've addressed that already in the fact that everything Slagle has said was correct. There's been no evidence showing it was incorrect. And one more point on the note, which is that second entry, which says practice resolved prior to interview, does not refer to Connie Gullett. That was Alan Slagle's testimony at deposition. It referred to an issue that Connie Gullett raised. That's correct, and that's an issue that affected all candidates, which was Jose Garibay's testimony. He said, "This is
how many of the candidates had were from the of those interviewed? Did they interview everyone who applied? Number one,
yes, Judge.
Okay, and of those who they interviewed, it was about half who had been in the waste division.
It was 3 out of 6, Judge.
Okay, so not quite. Yeah.
So that second entry doesn't refer. No testimony. There's no facts that shows that it refers to Connie Gullett. In fact, it could refer to anyone, and certainly to Eric Perry, who was a waste carrier. So I don't think there's any showing, certainly in the face of Slagle's testimony, that it didn't refer to Gullett. It's really basically, obstinate speculation to say, well, it might refer to Connie Gullett. So that takes the note out of the picture. What plaintiff is left with then is this alleged comment that was made about 6 months prior to the hiring decision. And there's a number of arguments that we have on that, Judge. The first two are admittedly technical, but not unimportant. One, again, is waiver, which is that this wasn't raised in opposition to the defendant's motion. It wasn't a fact that was ever even incorporated by reference to plaintiff's motion for summary judgment.
But Judge Mim did discuss this remark. If it had been a remark that we couldn't tell he knew anything about, I'd be much more inclined to say waiver. But he knew it was there, and presumably if he had thought Slagle was the only decision maker and he was going around saying things like this, that might have seemed like a different case.
He did address it, Judge, and that's correct. And obviously I have some more substantive arguments. One of which is that the comments, and let's assume that it's there and it exists and it's supported by proper evidence, is not evidence of pretext. First of all, there's no proper evidence establishing the significance of this comment that plaintiff wants to give it.
But don't you think it's really stretching it to think that language like that doesn't, in fact, represent a derogatory view toward women?
No, Judge. I think it needs to be seen, needs to be taken within the context of the comment as it was made. And Your Honors will excuse me for a moment, but Your Honor, see, my time is up. If I could just complete.
Go ahead and finish your thought.
This argument. The word bitch has different meanings in different, depending on how it's used and in the context that it's used. And if we look at the facts surrounding its use here, it's indicative of, if anything, personal animus as opposed to gender bias. This was one comment made on one occasion. There's no evidence that Alan Slagle referred to women this way generally, that he referred to Connie Gullett this way generally. We know from the record that Mr. Slagle and Ms. Gullett had a very close personal relationship at one point that soured, and hence that would lead to animus. And again, the fact which I mentioned before, Alan Slagle hired her year after year after year to work in streets. This isn't evidence of gender bias. It's just he didn't like her anymore.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will give you at least a full minute so that you can respond.
Thank you, Your Honors. First of all, directly addressing poor work record. That was a notation that Mr. Garibay made in response to a statement by Mr. Slagle. It was written on the bottom left-hand corner of his interview sheet. It is in the record. Three of seven applicants had waste experience, not three of six. Connie Gullett was the only individual that inquired about the waste policy during her interview.
But why, if that really was a policy, would this committee have wasted its time doing four other interviews? You know, men or women, either one. I mean, committees, it takes time to interview somebody.
Alan Slagle was told by a number of people not to apply the policy. There is no objective way that we can determine conclusively whether he applied it or not. In fact, Eric Perry was one of the three people out of seven that had it. Ms. Gullett was rehired in a fairly automatic fashion each and every year. The town changed its policy immediately after this for reasons not related to the instant suit. And
you can go ahead and finish your thought if you want.
Thank you. And lastly, Your Honor, there is, as Judge Mim correctly said, evidence of sex discrimination through the hostile environment type claims. We are not alleging hostile environment, but even Judge Mim admitted that plaintiff did allege through the men's restroom, the pornography in the restroom, the Hooters calendar, Slagle's comments to those things, that Ms. Gullett did demonstrate had a thin case for sex discrimination in his view. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We will take this case under advisement.